Moving on to our bloggers roundtable, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice talks about America's racial history as a birth defect. So what was she really condemning? Plus more on Afrocentric baby names. Are they going to keep you from getting a good job, or should folks stop being so snooty and embrace the linguistic creativity? With us, we've got Deborah Dickerson, author of the books An American Story and The End of Blackness. She blogs at motherjones.com. Pop culture critic Desmond Burton of the blog Afro Nerd, and Terrence Heath. He's an online producer and blogger at Campaign for America's Future, and his personal blog is The Republic of Tea. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So, you know, last month, Senator Barack Obama had to answer for why he stayed a member of Reverend Jeremiah Wright's Chicago Church, given that Wright made statements that some people felt were anti-American. And Obama gave the landmark speech addressing race in America. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice jumped into the race debate last week, telling the Washington Times that, quote, descendants of slaves did not get much of a head start. And I think you continue to see some of the effects of that. That particular birth defect makes it hard for us to confront it, hard for us to talk about it, etc. Now, some bloggers have suggested Secretary Rice used the term birth defect in reference to racial struggles at the birth of the nation. It's a bit of a convoluted quote. Deborah, what do you think she really meant?
I don't get why it's convoluted. I think that we're all just so trigger happy. To me, I don't see what's confusing. She's saying that slavery was the birth defect in a country that was founded as a refuge. So I think that people are so knee jerk and getting their buttons pushed so quickly. I don't understand why the statement is confusing, and I think people's knees start jerking and they just want the conversation to stop. So, you know, you point out that the person split in infinitive instead of having the conversation that I think she bravely, I mean, this is not the kind of thing you expect from Condoleezza Rice. I think people don't want to have the conversation that she was trying to take part in.
So, Desmond, do you take this as when she says birth defect? It's, you know, the phrase birth of a nation has these horrible connotations in some ways now because of the movie that was about the Klan, a seminal movie that really was a landmark film but also was very racist. But if you take it in the broader context of the birth of the nation and this being a birth defect that marred that birth of a nation, is that what you interpret her saying?
Well, I have to agree with Ms. Dickerson and her assertion. I didn't have a problem with what Condi Rice had stated. I thought that she was pretty accurate. I thought that, if anything, she might have screwed over her perception in as far as white media as versus some of our black media or black folk in certain surroundings. I think that there's a perception of a black conservative, and she doesn't really espouse victimization. So I think at some point it's okay to admit that these things did occur. But where do you go from there? So I think that's where the black conservative movement really is really what that is about.
Terrence, where do you think this leaves us in terms of, for example, perhaps providing room for black conservatives and progressives to have a dialogue about race?
I think what's amazing is that we've heard from some very politically diverse voices like Reverend Wright and Barack Obama and Condoleezza Rice, and they're all saying very similar things. And I think the point of Condoleezza Rice's comment about the birth defect, you know, metaphor is that we're still living with the realities and the consequences of something that this country was born with several hundred years ago.
Speaking of born with, I want to move on to an article that the New York Times did about mixed race identity. You know, there's been, you know, for decades now, there have been conversations about whether or not there is a multiracial identity for people who are part black that's separate from a black identity. I think right now the opinion, you know, is running, yes, you can have a separate multiracial identity. But Deborah, I'm going to start with you, in part because you are the mother of two biracial children. When you think about this ongoing conversation that has been going on for decades but has intensified with the rising number of interracial marriages, with Barack Obama's candidacy, where's the conversation headed now? Are people being asked to either or about how they identify, or can you be someone like Barack Obama who says he calls himself a black man of mixed heritage?
Right. Or like Tiger Woods calling himself Cablin Asian. I think that until more of these people, more of the multiracial people speak up and and talk about how they want to be considered. I think that that has to happen. And when you've got the old guard, and I think it's probably black and white who just kind of want to split the difference and make you black. How can that be? I mean, my children's father is white, but is all I'm ever supposed to talk to them about is, you know, slavery and Jim Crow and this sort of thing when there's this German, Scotch, Scotch-Irish side of them as well, English even on my side. So I think that we've got to resist these essentializations and allow people... I think we have to allow people to tell us who they are. I mean, what if one of my kids turns out to be gay on top of being multiracial? I think they might want to be more identified that way than by race. So I think the more that we talk about these things, the more we see how rigid and kind of meaningless these very limited self-definitions are. And I think the more that people like Obama and Tiger Woods and Mariah Carey, people like that, talk about it and demand to be understood in something approaching a meaningfully complicated way, I don't think we're there yet, but I think these conversations are moving us forward.
Terrence, you are a father as well, and you are gay. You're, part of you and your partner are raising your children. And when you think about this concept of identity, what do you think about the idea of identities that you have and you know about in yourself and identities that people see in you? You know, some people can see a mixed race person and they'll see black. That's what they'll see. Other people might see the same person and say, oh, that person is biracial, or they might not even know. And I think that one of the sort of sticking points in this conversation over identity has been some of the tensions in the discussion over whether the gay rights model is similar to the civil rights model. Is there a level of identity that is seen as opposed to identity that's expressed? So when you think about all of those things in the blender, no matter what you think of yourself as, how important is it that other people may view you a certain way? If you say that you're multiracial, but you're driving through some town and somebody calls you the N-word, you know, that's something that might just happen.
Well, first of all, I'm a huge advocate of self-determination. People decide what their own identities are. But I think in this country, we have this need for people to be one thing, or if there are multiple identities in play, to prioritize one over the other. And my attitude, my approach is that I am me, all of me, every facet of me, every day. The reality that I have lived with, and that I know that my sons, I'm raising two African-American boys that my partner and I adopted, I know the reality that they're going to face is what people will see. And I hope I can pass on to them what I've had to learn learn myself, and that is that there is more to me than what people see, and to not let what people see define me in terms of what they're going to project. But at the same time, I know certain things that as an African American man, I am going to have to deal with or at least keep in mind.
Desmond, how does this whole idea of what is seen as opposed to what is, internally felt or internally identified with play out in politics? For example, black conservatism. You know, people may look at an African American and assume, okay, well, that person's got to be a Democrat. And there's that level of identification that might happen that even extends outside of, you know, the basic racial issues.
Well, I think that... if anything, one of the things that I think that African Americans we suffer from is a lack of multiple voices or a myriad of voices. I think if we see more people out there talking about this kind of thing, I think that you'll be able to have more clarity on it. My feelings as far as racial identity, as far as again going back to African Americans, race has always been a socio-political construct anyway. And I think in some respects, it's also moot in regards to black people because Dr. Henry Louis Gates had a recent special. He's been doing this African American Lives. And he says, he was able to tell these notables, whether it was Chris Rock or Tina Turner or a number of other people, their lineage. And as Africans in this country, we've seen how we all look. And it's jarring to see the reaction of someone, let's say a Chris Rock who is brown complected, to be shown a white antecedent two or three generations removed. So to me, whether we discuss Obama's identity or not, it's really a moot subject. It's always going to be based on who you look like, and it's going to be that whole quick reaction as to, okay, this is who I perceive you to be. If a policeman is going to accost you, or if you're trying to get a cab, there you go. And I think Obama has already spoken about that. So for the life of an African American person, it really is moot. We have all this admixture in our bloodline anyway.
I want to go back to the well on something that we talked about in February. Call this a repeat by popular demand.
I'm very familiar with it.
Oh, yeah. I know you've been getting a lot of mail about this. What's in a name? You know, we asked whether African Americans pay an economic price for having distinctly ethnic or black sounding names. And you were on the show. You said if you have a name like Lakeisha, you were in trouble, basically. What kind of reactions have you been getting to that? And how do you respond to people who've been sending you tons of mail?
Well, listen, I'm going to remain steadfast in my beliefs because I go by what I've read and what I see anecdotally. And, I got a lot of positive responses from that. A lot of people said, I'm glad that you said what you said. And I had some people that were just very irate. Probably someone who was a Daquan or Deshaun was probably angry with me. Now, to clarify what I said last time, I'm not condemning a person because of their name. It would be stupid to say that because you are named something, that equals problems for you in life, but I think that it is an indicator for where you may go in life. It doesn't mean that you should be hampered by it, but also we should use some level of discernment. I mean, there's a definite difference between someone like Barack Obama as opposed to Shanae. Barack Obama, this person, he can go to his African grandmother in Kenya and touch her. I can't do that. I'd have to take a swab, like I mentioned before, to find out who I'm related to.
Oh, so, my gosh. Well, we don't have too much time. I want to get the other two folks in here. But, you know, Terrence, it strikes me that people cross the name line both ways. There are people who may sort of anglicize their urban fabulous names. And then there's other people who adopt African names. And so, you know, is it really just about choice? Is it about, you know, you're born with a name, but that's not the one that you have to keep, and you can make an economic or a cultural decision? Or is there something deeper to it?
You know, there are a lot of things in play. I mean, when we were deciding what to name our two boys, we chose very, I don't know what you'd call them, very standard or anglicized names because that was what we liked. And I think part of it is what people like. But when you are talking about African-sounding names versus actual African names, I think there's also a cultural yearning at play, a desire to have a connection to a past and to a history that we don't necessarily get a lot of in this country.
Deborah, just quickly, do you think that people who have names that are, you know, kind of invented, Africanized, and who may not be treated as seriously in the workplace, according to studies, should say, hey, you know what? I need the money. I'm just going to change myself from Deshaun to Sean.
I am not sure that people are choosing these names, A, because they think they're quasi-African, and B, because they feel a need for some sort of connection to Africa. I've missed some research, but from what I can tell, the names are just being chosen sort of by the, now, of course, Raheem and names like that are different, but, you know, Najon and my son is in the first grade and everybody in there but him has a name with an apostrophe in it, you know. Oh. So I'm not sure people are hearkening back to Africa, but that's a really tough one. Should you change your name? That
right.
is... I maybe use your initials or something, but
people have done that.
That is a really, really hard one because you're
right,
turning
got,
your back on your mama.
You don't want that resume talked out.
We got to wrap it up here, but we're going to get some more mail. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Terrence Heath's personal blog is The Republic of Tea. He was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C. Pop culture critic Desmond Burton runs the blog Afro Nerd. He was at our New York studios. And Deborah Dickerson is author of the books An American Story and The End of Blackness. She blogs at motherjones.com, and she was at WAMC in Albany, New York. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org.